Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James, along with Pastor William Fink, on another episode of Christogenos. In our continuing series on the book of Isaiah, we are completed chapter 27. And just a quick recap of chapters 25 through 27, we're primarily about end time prophecies, and there's numerous places where Isaiah can be talking about a historical subject and then all of a sudden break into an end times prophecy. And Isaiah, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Daniel, all of these prophets are, in fact, all of the minor prophets as well, they all talk about the judgment day. There's simply no doubt about it. So, Abilah, do you have a brief recap for what we talked about last time?
First I'd like to say that we can't lose, there was a burden on Judah, the oracle of the Valley of Vision.
Okay.
And then there was a burden of Tyre, and that ran for four or five chapters.
Right.
And that, and that shows right there, and it talked about the people in the aisles, and that's probably the most important four or five chapters to understand the unity and the general theme of the book of Isaiah. Because from Isaiah chapter 41 on, as we'll see, those chapters are written to the people in the aisle specifically.
Right.
And the Jews try to claim that that's some later Isaiah and this and that, and that's just bull. The linchpin is Isaiah chapters 23, 24, 25, 26. They're all about Tyre.
Right.
And Tyre was, even according to the Greek testimonies, Tyre was the launching point for all of the colonies of the so-called Phoenicians, the children of Israel,
right,
into the Mediterranean and Europe.
Yeah, and by the way, tomorrow night's show, we're going to deal with that subject in particular, the migrations of, I guess you could call them the Scythians, the Cimmerians, various Israelites under different names across the Mediterranean, from what is today Turkey to Spain to Ireland, England, Norway, etc. That's going to be the theme for tomorrow's show, so please join us for that. Yeah.
Right.
So
now I'm probably going to do that pretty much impromptu tomorrow.
Okay.
I want to clarify something I neglected to mention last week concerning the Key of David, and
okay.
I stand by everything I said, and except that, last week's sightings, and I was citing Clifton's writing. I didn't notice this. I think Clifton did.
Okay.
I compared the peg on which the Key of David was hung
right.
to the stewards of the royal house and those nobles of Judah who were to watch over it and protect it.
Okay.
And I then used Queen Elizabeth, as Clifton did in his writings, the Queen of England and her marriage to the illegitimate Philip as an example of the failure of that peg.
Right.
And
okay.
all of this is true. However, Elizabeth is really only the most glaring example of that failure. She's the foremost example of that failure. The result is Charles.
Yes.
Charles is an atheist, a tree hugger, and follows every religion of the Jews.
Yeah, right. a Buddhist, Hindu.
Right, he's an anti-Christian, and he's the perfect result of the demonstration of the failure of that peg. However, the noble families of both Germany and England and other places in Europe have been intermarrying with the scions of Jewish merchant and banking families.
Right.
And this has been going on steadily for 200 years now.
Yes.
Hitler wrote about it, and you don't have to go far to see it in Britain, and where I would bet half of the at least half of the noble houses of especially the House of Lords in Britain is of Jewish descent,
right?
Or
partially.
Seats are filled by people who were married to Jews, one
yes.
or the other,
exactly,
and they are the modern day Sheepness that came in and carved out their own sepulchres. In the places of where Israel is supposed to inhabit.
Right.
And this is so it's not only Elizabeth. That's all I want to say. She is the foremost example, but it's not
right.
only her.
Right.
It's something that's been affecting all of the House of David or the royal families of Europe for
right.
150, 200 years now.
Right. Well, a lot of people are concerned that if Queen Elizabeth II dies, there won't be any legitimate heir to the line of David, but that's not true. There could be a lot of people who are pure-blooded Israelites, pure-blooded Judahites, who are waiting in the wings you know.
Well, that's true, but we have an affection for that particular seat of royalty.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and it's probably come down to us. Well, England was the foremost Saxon country through the last 200, 300 years overall. America is the Zionist power today in the world. We've all been usurped. But America became the most powerful nation. However, England is still, the foremost European nation and has been for several hundred years. So we tend to have an affection for the for Westminster Castle and the King of England because of our Anglophile culture.
Right. Yeah. Well, the English-speaking tribes of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh, are pretty much comprised of Britain, Canada, America, and of course we migrated to Australia, South Africa, and places like that. So the English-speaking tribes are Ephraim and Manasseh, Britain and America primarily. Yeah. So there's a lot going on between the two nations. However, Britain is turning into a Muslim country as we speak. Right?
Rwandanistan, it's over with. I think it's a done deal. I'm sorry, I hate to say it, but
yeah, I don't see how Britain's going to recover. And there's a revolution coming here too. There's no doubt about that. So, folks, it's time. In fact, you got out of the joint just in time to see the end. Look at all the stock market lost 1,000 points today. We've got false flag events all over the place. I mean, so every day there's
right. I'm not going to say that the dragon can't still breathe some power into the beast.
Right.
But it's looking pretty dire. There's no doubt.
We're getting real close to the end, and the economy is collapsing. They're definitely going to have to put a new currency into circulation because the Federal Reserve note has just about had it. So we're anticipating a lot of major changes in. Obviously, the military situation is still dire. All these wars we're having are not good for America in any way, shape, or form. It's all hurtful to true Israel until true Israel wakes up. And that's what a lot of these chapters in Isaiah are about. So let's continue here, chapter 28. Woe to the crown of pride. Too many proud Israelites. To the drunkards of Ephraim, whose glorious beauty is a fading flower. Oh, man, we're seeing it fading right now. Which are on the head of the fat valleys of them that are overcome with wine. And, of course, the British like their ale, and, we like our beer. Verse 2, behold, the Lord has a mighty and strong one, which is a tempest of hail and a destroying storm, as a flood of mighty waters overflowing, shall cast down to the earth with the hand. The crown of pride, the drunkards of Ephraim, shall be trodden underfoot. Okay, so if we consider Britain to be Ephraim, and this crown of pride is actually a reference to the British crown, the crown of, obviously it's the house of David in the territory of Ephraim and Manasseh, it's really obvious that this pride, there's not much room left for pride. It's just about over. Verse 4, and the glorious beauty which is on the head of the fat valley shall be a fading flower, and as the hasty fruit before the summer, which when he that looks up upon it sees, while it is yet in his hand, he eats it up. In that day shall Yahweh of hosts be for a crown of glory and for a diadem of beauty to the residue of his people. Okay? And here's this concept of residue. We see remnant. In the last chapter, he will gather his people one by one, chapter 27, verse 12. There's not a lot of the Israelite people aware of what's going on and capable of wearing that crown of glory. They simply aren't. Verse 6, and for a spirit of judgment to him that sits in judgment, and for strength to them that turn a battle to the gate. But they also have erred through wine and through strong drink are out of their way. And, of course, wine, we could talk about drugs. We could talk about drugs for years.
but I don't think that wine itself is certainly not evil, but the culture that is represented by drunkenness, that party-hardy, lascivious culture which we have in America and Europe today.
That's exactly right. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. And, of course, strong drink is false doctrine as well. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. So we can see, let's give ourselves a little bit of credit here in Christian Identity. Of course, every single denomination claims that they have the truth, they have all the answers, and only their denomination's point of view is correct. However, none of these other denominations, I mean, there's very few denominations besides Christian Identity that are taking the collapse of Western civilization seriously. You know, they just aren't.
They're not even looking at it as a collapse. They're not. They don't see a decline. They don't see a collapse. They just reinvent themselves and adjust themselves to the lascivious culture.
Yes, yeah. And the worse it gets, the more they enjoy it, it seems. Okay. And that's what, kind of what the next verse says. For all tables are full of vomit and filthiness, so that there is no place clean. You know, the garbage that's coming out of the mouths of so-called Christian preachers today is just unbelievable. You know, they're accepting everything. They're accepting everything to be popular and to increase the number of butts in the pews. That's what modern Christianity is about. Verse 9, whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breast. So you have to be mature in this message. And, you know, with the feel-good Christianity, the gospel of personal gratification, and, you know, everything that's happening in the churches today is all designed to make you feel good. And has no, and they can't handle the truth. they can't handle it.
Not well, even, no, they reject it. If they can't go to the mall, it's not religion.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there you go. The new churches have to be in the mall.
it's the perfect religion for consumerism.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because the short attention spans that they give us through commercials. It's like consciousness, the ability to really consider thoroughly questions of great importance. It's beyond the ability of the average Israelite these days. It's just beyond. You know?
Well, it's the best religion the Jews could buy.
That's right.
Any religion that promotes the benefits of consumerism is perfect religion for Mystery Babylon, the Jewish merchants, globalism, international trade. That's what they're all about.
Yeah.
Breaking our borders, destroying our cultures, and promoting a one-world slime.
Yes, yes. In verse 10, for precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. And of course, today, we don't have any precepts. We don't have biblical concepts being discussed by me. It's slogans. Like Jesus loves everybody.
And here it's, you know, the people are... What Isaiah is saying is that the people are showing themselves to be unteachable.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And they are. They are unteachable because, number one, they're proud. They're proud of their error. And they're in total rebellion. They're rebelling against Yahweh's law, and they have not accepted their Lord and Savior, Yahshua Messiah. They have not accepted him. They say they do, but they have not. Verse 11, for with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. Now, of course, this can mean that we will have a new language. Do you have any other interpretation for this verse here, Bill?
Well, let's see how Paul interpreted it in my translation of 1 Corinthians 14:21.
Okay.
In the law it is written that in other languages and with other lips will I speak to this people.
Okay.
And not even in that manner will they heed me.
Right.
And that shows the people of God are not speaking Hebrew today, right?
That's right.
I mean, it can't be.
Right. And even the Jews aren't speaking Hebrew.
Well, no, that's true. They're not. They're speaking Yiddish.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, verse 12. To whom he said, this is the rest wherewith you may cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing, yet they would not hear. But the word of Yahweh was to them precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. So I don't know.
They're
how
not teachable. That
no.
They're not. You know, they could learn at this time. You know, during the kingdom period, that they were all gathering in the synagogue every week and hearing the word of Moses.
Right.
And
right.
And leaving and immediately forgetting it.
Exactly. Well, it's the same thing in the churches today. Even the pablum.
Well, they hear John 3:16 week after week after week. Right. I mean, what else do they hear?
Yeah, the pablum they hear in the churches, even that they don't remember. Okay, verse 14. Wherefore, hear the word of Yahweh, you scornful men, that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. Now, here I submit that this word Jerusalem is not to be taken literally. It's to be taken as Israel.
Well, right, because Jerusalem is not ruling over the northern tribes at this time.
Right.
And I thought it possibly, you know, well, first the rulers suffered a greater punishment for the errors of the people.
Mm-hmm.
But while Jerusalem is not officially ruling over Ephraim at this time, perhaps the nobles and the wealthy men in the capital still exert a great amount of influence over the people.
Yes.
But even that's difficult to say. It seems that Jerusalem is being used as a
Metaphor for the people.
As a metaphor for the nation.
Yes, for the nation, exactly.
Or at least for the core of the nation.
Yes, yeah. And so, yeah, Jerusalem would be the those Israelites of both houses who try to understand or who would comprise the true nation, okay? So let me repeat verse 14. Wherefore, hear the word of Yahweh, you scornful men, that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. And if you just deleted the word in, which is Jerusalem, because there's many, many times where we'll find the word Jerusalem is representative of the nation, not the city. Okay? And, for example, in British Israel, even Arnold Kennedy refused to concede that the word Jerusalem can be used metaphorically for the people. Okay, and not for the city.
Well, and what did he say, you know, when Jeremiah stood outside the gates and broke a pot and said, this city will never be made whole again, and then a couple of chapters later, he's talking about Jerusalem.
Right, he's talking about the people, right, the nation. Yes, very good. Verse 15, because you have said we have made a covenant with death, and with hell are we at agreement, when the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come to us, for we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hidden ourselves. And of course, our leaders are certainly in this position today.
This sounds exactly like the people in Washington today.
That's right. No doubt. And in the churches. Verse 16. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation a stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone. Now, obviously, this stone is not a literal stone, okay? And it's not the literal Jerusalem.
And it's not the literal Zion, right, exactly.
Right, exactly. A sure foundation, he that believes shall not make haste. Okay.
Now, this passage is quoted by both Peter and Paul.
Okay.
And both of them understood it to be a reference to Christ. There was no doubt. And there's a very similar passage in Psalm 118, which is often, you know, confused or linked together with this passage.
Okay.
That says the stone which the builders refused is become the headstone of the corner.
Uh-huh.
And that was also understood as a reference to Christ by both the apostles and by Christ himself as attested to in three of the Gospels.
Right, right.
So this stone is definitely Christ, as all the apostles agree.
Yeah, and the stone meaning foundation, something solid that you can really rest on and be sure of. Verse 17. Judgment also will I lay to the line, and righteousness to the plummet, and the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters shall overflow the hiding place. And your covenant with death shall be disannulled, and your agreement with hell shall not stand. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, then you shall be trodden down by it. Now, of course, this has happened several times in our history, the Babylonian captivity, the Assyrian captivity, various times. The Israelite nation was overrun by armies. Okay, the Greeks and Romans did it again, but and we're also talking, here's judgment, verse 17. It's going to happen one last time. The Bible keeps telling us it's going to happen one last time. Verse 19, from the time that it goes forth, it shall take you, for morning by morning shall it pass over, by day and by night, and it shall be a vexation only to understand the report. What does it? A vexation only to understand the report. What does that mean?
Well, let
me have a handle on that.
No, actually, I do have a lot of notes here on passages, the way they're translated in the Septuagint and the NAS, because of the difficulty of reading many of these passages in the King James.
Right.
Now, the Septuagint, Brenton's English says here, 28:19, whenever it shall pass by, it shall take you morning by morning. It shall pass by in the day and
yeah,
in the
well,
night.
Yeah, well, when the terror comes, it's going to be constant for quite some time. And it's going to be very terrifying.
Well, that's what it seems like. As often as it passes through, it will seize you. From morning after morning, it will pass through during the day or night, and it will be sheer terror to understand what it means.
Oh, okay.
That's Isaiah. That's the
understand
NAS.
Understand the report. Okay. And, yeah, and it will be very terrifying. And for those of us who I think I get what it's trying to say here, that those of us who do understand it will, obviously, we'll be terrified for our own safety and for the safety of our friends and relatives and for...
Well, that's what it seems to mean.
Yeah.
It'll be
yeah.
a vexation to understand the report, only to understand the report. In other words, if you understand it, you're going to be troubled by it. Yes,
yeah,
that
right.
seems to be what it says.
But those who don't understand it are going to be even more terrified because they'll have no idea what's going on. Verse 20, for the bed is shorter than that a man can stretch himself on it, and the covering narrower than that he can wrap himself in it, okay? Well, apparently what we're talking about here is the doctrine and the lifestyle that our people are leading is just not going to be, it's not going to be adequate. And they're going to have to turn back to Yahweh, verse 21. For Yahweh shall rise up as in the Mount Perazim, he shall be angry as in the valley of Gibeon, and he may do his work, his strange work, and bring to pass his act, his strange act, or extraordinary act.
Let me read 28:20 from Brenton's Septuagint, and I'm looking at the Greek, and that seems to be what it's saying.
Okay.
And ye that are distressed, we cannot fight, but we ourselves too weak for you to be gathered. That seems to make no sense at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know
right.
if that's an interpretation of this Hebrew or not, but it's very, very different from what
did you say that was verse 20?
Yes.
Because that translation says nothing about a bed being shorter.
Well, no, I understand that. That's why I wanted to read it.
Right.
I don't.
Okay. Well, yeah, and then because for those who aren't familiar with the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures. And those scriptures preserved by the tribe of Judah, by the house of Judah.
Well, right, but 19 and 21 are very much like the King James, you know, or the Masoretic.
Yeah, but 20 isn't.
20 is nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing like it.
And but we have the same problem. Obviously, the King James was the Hebrew was translated from the Masoretic text, which is a highly redacted text, missing a lot of material that the Septuagint includes. But we have the same problem with the Septuagint, namely the Judaizers are the ones who have translated this stuff, okay? And they're always translating it to favor the Jews' version of reality, right?
Well, the Septuagint is the official translation of the time.
Right, it was.
And it's clear that there were other – it was the state-sanctioned translation. And,
right.
And there were other Greek translations that were not like – the Septuagint.
But what I'm getting at is that the English translation of the Septuagint is subject to the same problems that the King James is in translating from the Masoretic.
Well, right. The English translations of the Septuagint aren't ideal. And a lot of times I've caught Brenton actually following the King James
uh-huh.
and ignoring the Septuagint Greek.
Okay.
I have a list of those passages in my Septuagint
yeah.
that someday on Christogenia I hope to make an illustration of.
Yeah. But verse 20 is just totally different. And in either case, it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It seems to be understandable in the King James, but what you read from the Septuagint just didn't seem to make any sense at all. Right?
No, but here Brenton followed the Greek
uh-huh.
it looks faithful. I'm looking at the Greek along with the Septuagint, and it looks faithful.
Okay, it may have been a Hebrewism, okay, a Hebrew metaphor that nobody really comprehended, that it's a metaphor and don't know how to translate it into either Greek or English, right?
Well, that's very possible, and that happens often.
Yeah, okay, so verse 21, for Yahweh shall rise up as in Mount Perazim, okay, and I quoted that already, his extraordinary act. Okay, verse 22, now therefore be you not mockers, lest your bands be made strong, for I have heard from Yahweh Elohim of hosts a consumption, even determined upon the whole earth. Okay, we're talking about the big judgment day again. Give you ear and hear my voice, hearken and hear my speech. Does the plowman plow all day to sow? Does he open and break the clods of his ground? When he has made plain the face thereof, does he not cast abroad the fitches and scatter the cumin and cast in the principal wheat and the pointed barley and the rye and in the place? Of course, when he plows, he intends to sow.
Now a fitch, a fitch, cumin is camin in Hebrew, and it's probably where we got the word cumin from.
Right.
All right, and a fitch is a small black plant with acrid seeds.
Acrid seeds?
Very acrid, acidic seeds.
Yes.
Used as a condiment.
Oh, okay.
A plant with small black acrid seeds.
Oh, okay, so
like
pepper.
I think those small black seeds have a connotation here.
Right.
Because cumin is also a fairly acrid plant used as a condiment.
Yes, yes, very spicy. Yes, okay, verse 26. For his God does instruct him to discretion and does teach him, for the fitches are not threshed with the threshing instrument, neither is a cartwheel turned about upon the cumin, but the fitches are beaten out with a staff and the cumin with a rod. Sounds like, you have to do things certain ways. Verse 28, bread, corn, or grain is bruised because he will not ever be threshing it, nor break it with the wheel of his cart, nor bruise it with his horsemen. This also comes forth from Yahweh of hosts, which is wonderful in counsel and excellent in working.
Now there's a there's a comparison being made here in the Greek that's just lost in the Masoretic and the King James.
Okay.
And first let me say that, verse 25, the harvest of men is being compared here to a harvest of grain.
Yes.
Just as Christ relates the parable of the wheat and the tares.
Yes.
And as we see again in Revelation 14, the harvest of men is the harvest of withered grapes and then of ripe grapes.
Yeah.
Now, for his God doth instruct him, the subject there is the plowman, to discretion. In other words, the plowman who's doing the harvesting,
yes,
should have discretion.
Yes.
And exactly. God, Yahweh, teaches the plowman.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Now, the fitches, as I said, are a plant with small black acrid seeds, and cumin is also a plant used, as a condiment, as a spice or a spice. Now Brenton's Septuagint makes a lot more sense, and I've checked the translation, and it's faithful to the Greek, and I'd like to read that Isaiah 28 verses 27 and 28. For the black poppy is not cleansed with harsh treatment, nor will a wagon wheel pass over the cumin, but the black poppy is threshed with a rod, and the cumin shall be eaten with bread. In other words, the black poppy is not acceptable, and the cumin is. That's what it means to me. For I will not be wroth with you forever, neither shall the voice of my anger crush you.
Right. So poppy seed cake is no good.
Well, yeah, it's making a comparison here. That's what
right.
It seems to me.
I
could be wrong, but that's what it makes a lot more sense.
It's definitely a wheat versus tares type of parable.
That's what I believe.
Yes. No. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Okay. Very, very good. So, chapter 29, verse 1. Woe to Ariel, the city where David dwells. Add you year to year, let them kill sacrifices.
Now let me read the NAS there.
Okay.
Woe, O Ariel, the city where David once camped, add year to year, observe your feasts on schedule.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah, so now Ariel is not Jerusalem. It's some other because this sounds present tense. Woe to Ariel, to Ariel, the city where David dwells. And you said,
well, well, that's dwelt. It's past tense, it seems, in the King James.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, I mean, dwelt is past tense.
You mean in the Septuagint, because in the King James here, it's translated as being present tense.
Well, I'm sorry. In my King James, in Bible Works, it's dwelt.
Dwelt?
Yes, sir.
Huh. This is dwells. D-W-E-L-L-S is my translation here. Add you year to year, let them kill sacrifices. Yet I will distress Ariel, and there shall be heaviness and sorrow, and it shall be to me as Ariel. And I will camp against you round about, and I will lay siege against you with a mount, and I will raise forts against you. And you shall be brought down, and shall speak out of the ground, and your speech shall be low out of the dust, and your voice shall be as of one that has a familiar spirit out of the ground, and your speech shall whisper out of the dust. In other words, what we have to say will be rather meaningless.
Well, first, Brenton Septuagint in verse 2 says, "For I will grievously afflict Ariel, and her strength and her wealth shall be mine."
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the city where David dwells, it's past tense in my copy of the King James, in the NAS, and in the Septuagint.
Okay.
And in the Greek. It's all past tense.
Yeah. Okay.
And Ariel seems to refer to Jerusalem here.
Yeah, okay.
To the real Jerusalem, and Ariel happens to mean Lion of God.
Okay, very good. Verse 5, "Moreover, the multitude of your strangers shall be like small dust, and the multitude of the terrible ones that shall be as chaff that passes away. Yea, it shall be at an instant suddenly." Okay, yeah, destruction comes pretty swiftly.
How the aliens flock to our biggest cities.
Yes.
The multitude of thy strangers. Jeremiah, and we see that today everywhere.
That's right.
And Jeremiah told us that the people of Jerusalem had become a strange plant unto Yahweh.
Right.
And Ezekiel in chapter 16 informs us of the composition of these strangers.
Yes.
Where he says of Jerusalem that thy father was an Amorite and thy mother was a Hittite.
Right.
And they're the people Jeremiah later calls the bad figs of Judah.
And, of course, in modern times, white Israelites built Detroit and blacks have destroyed it, right?
Right, and white Israelites built the city and Jews inhabited it.
That's right, exactly. There's always a progression. We build the cities, the Jews corrupt them, and then the chaff destroys them. That's how it works, folks. It's history over and over again. Verse 6. "You shall be visited of Yahweh of hosts with thunder and with earthquake and great noise, with storm and tempest and the flame of devouring fire." Okay, this fire, this judgment by fire, is the end times, folks. It's not going to be, the world is not going to be destroyed by water. It's going to be destroyed by fire this time. Verse 7, "And the multitude of all the nations that fight against Ariel, even all that fight against her and her munition and that distress her shall be as a dream of a night vision."
Which means to me that they'll be transient. They will pass away.
Right.
Disappear.
Yes.
And that's a fulfillment to the promise to Abraham that I will curse him that curses you.
Right. Very good. Verse 8, "It shall even be as when a hungry man dreams, and behold, he eats, but he awakes and his soul is empty. Or as when a thirsty man dreams, and behold, he drinks, but he awakes, and behold, he is faint, and his soul has appetite. So shall the multitude of all the nations be that fight against Mount Zion." Of course, in these latter times, there is a tremendous anger and hostility against our people. And that's because the Jew has agitated blacks, Latinos, Arabs, all those people against us, blaming us, making us look like the evil ones. He teaches this in the university classes, right? And his propaganda is all, we hear constant propaganda about how the white man exterminated the American Indians, right? But we don't hear a word about the Jews exterminating Palestinians, right? Okay, it's all very one-sided propaganda. And the whole
Look at the Bolshevik Revolution compared to Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
Even if Hitler killed 6 million Jews, the Bolsheviks killed 60 million Christians.
Right.
And they were Jews.
Right. The Bolsheviks were, yes. Verse 9, stay yourselves and wonder, cry you out and cry, they are drunken but not with wine, they stagger but not with strong drink. They're drunk with false doctrine, they are drunk with stupidity, with the theory of evolution and all kinds of nonsense, that they should have more intelligence than to believe all this stuff, but they believe it anyway. Verse 10, for Yahweh has poured out upon you the spirit of deep sleep and has closed your eyes, the prophets and your rulers, the seers, has he covered.
Blindness is a clear consequence of disobedience.
That's right. That's right. No doubt about it. Okay, verse 11. And the vision of all has become to you as the words of a book that is sealed, which men deliver to one that is learned, saying, read this, I pray you. And he says, I cannot, for it is sealed. And, of course, there's not a Judeo-Christian minister who can understand the Bible at all. Okay, verse 12.
Well, they try to tell you that the revelation is sealed.
Yeah.
That they, you know, the book of Daniel in the end says it's sealed.
Right.
But the revelation says that it's not. The book is open.
Right.
But the average pastor will say, oh, the revelation, that's sealed. I can't read that.
Right.
They confuse Daniel and the revelation.
Well, it is sealed to them. So they're actually being honest, right? Okay. And the book is delivered to him that is not learned, saying, read this, I pray you. And he says, I am not learned. Wherefore, Yahweh said, for as much as this people draw near me with their mouth, and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men. Therefore.
Now let me say that, you know, it's the Septuagint version that's quoted in Matthew's Gospel
okay.
by Christ here.
Okay.
And I'd like to read it from Brenton's English. And the Lord has said, this people draw nigh to me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me.
Yes.
But in vain do they worship me,
yes,
teaching the commandments and doctrines of men.
Right.
That's a lot closer to what Christ said, you know,
right,
as recorded
exactly
by Matthew. In,
yeah, it's almost
in
verbatim.
Chapter 15, verses 7 through 9.
Yeah, so you get the clear connection from the Septuagint. Very good. All right, verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among this people, even a marvelous and a wonder, for the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hidden. Indeed, you have to, what was that, the myth of Sisyphus? I don't know if people are familiar with the story, but he was, no, it wasn't Sisyphus, I forget who it was. But anyway, Diosthenes, if I got the right Greek story. He wanders through, the guy's walking through the countryside in the daylight carrying a lantern, okay? And whenever somebody asks him, why are you carrying a lantern in broad daylight? His answer is, I'm looking for an honest man, right? can't be found in today's society, because even the Christians don't believe in the law. They think they believe they're saved already. So it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
They only believe in John 3:16 and the rapture.
Right. There you go. Verse 14, therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work, and wise men shall perish, and the understanding of the prudent men shall be hidden. Woe to them that seek deep to hide their counsel from Yahweh, and their works are in the dark, and they say, who sees us and who knows us? Yeah, well, of course, the people who are conspiring against us, think they'll never be discovered, verse 16.
Well, let me say that the Septuagint says, woe to them that deepen their counsel and not by the Lord.
And not by the Lord.
And the NAS says, woe to those who deeply hide their plans from Yahweh.
Okay.
It seems that there's a lot of disagreement over some simple phrases.
Right, right, yeah. But the basic thrust is there that you can't hide anything from Yahweh. You just can't, verse 16. Surely your turning of things upside down shall be esteemed as the potter's clay. For shall the work say of him that made it, he made me not? Or shall the thing framed say of him that framed it, he hath no understanding? Well, yes, we do.
And this is what is paraphrased by Paul in Romans 9:20.
Uh-huh.
It's
yeah.
This very verse where,
right,
where he says, yeah, you know, how dare you question, you're a lump of clay, and how dare you question the potter?
Right.
And he says, shall the thing... form, yeah, say to him that made it, why did you make me this way?
Right.
And it seems to me that, yeah, you know, is not the elevation of Esau over Jacob the turning of things upside down?
Yes. Well, certainly the Jews claim to be more wise than Yahweh himself, right? And the Judeo-Christians, by falsifying Scripture, do exactly the same thing. They say they're wiser than God.
Well, and
right
they
now,
believe the Jews rather than
right,
Christ.
Exactly. Or they believe that the gospel of race mixing is what the Bible teaches. It does not teach any such thing. Yet that's what, and so if we, you know, the racists of the world are the new niggers, right? We're the new niggers of the world because we're defending the right of our race to exist. Everybody hates racists. We're the new niggers, right? Verse 17. Is it not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest? And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, I hope, I pray, that this light is happening right now on the internet, verse 19.
Well, here is one of those examples of in that day.
Yes.
That you know, I mean, this hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Maybe on a small scale, but not really. I mean, I wouldn't count a few thousand people as a great awakening.
That's right. Yeah, well, there's not going to be a mass conversion. It just says the word shall be heard. And, you know, it's just like the Ezekiel's Valley of Dry Bones. You know, the dry bones come together. It doesn't say how fast it's going to be, and it doesn't say it's going to be all of Israel. You know, we're not, you know, it's certainly not all of Adam kind. A lot of Adam kind rejects this message. Verse 19, the meek also shall increase their joy in Yahweh, and the poor among men shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. For the terrible one is brought to nothing, praise Yahweh, and the scorner is consumed. And all that watch for iniquity are cut off, or all that practice it or look to do it. Verse 21, that makes a man an offender for a word, and lay a snare for him that reproves in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of nothing.
Now this is the criminalization of Christianity through hate crime laws.
Right.
This verse 21, I quote this on my site. And several other places.
Yes.
This is the perfect description of what goes on when Christianity is criminalized for hate crime laws.
Right. Yes.
It's evil to be a homosexual, that it's evil to race mix, that it's evil to partake in certain behavior.
Right.
And they're all Christian principles, and Christians have a moral duty and a duty to God to vociferate them.
Yes. Yes.
To protest those things.
Right.
Yet they would make a man an offender for a word.
Yeah, a word being anti-Semite.
Lay a trap for him that reproves in the gate. In other words, if you speak out against these things publicly,
yes,
you are caught in a trap.
Right.
And turn aside the just for a thing of naught. In other words, the word is nothing. You know, you're not doing anything to anybody. You're not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
But they don't like to hear that they're in sin.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And all I have to do is call you an anti-Semite and racist, and all of a sudden, you know, you're persona non grata.
Yeah. No doubt.
Verse 22. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, who redeemed Abraham concerning the house of Jacob, Jacob shall not now be ashamed, neither shall his face now wax pale. But when he sees his children, the work of my hands in the midst of him, they shall sanctify my name and sanctify the Holy One of Jacob, and shall fear the God of Israel. They also that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine. Okay, so this obviously would have to be post-judgment day, because I don't see this happening.
It's not going to happen until the judgment day.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen at all.
Yeah. All right, chapter 30, verse 1. Woe to the rebellious children, says Yahweh, that take counsel but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin.
And that's exactly what's going on today.
Yeah, no doubt. Verse 2, that walk to go down into Egypt, which is slavery, and have not asked at my mouth to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. In other words, they trust in secular government.
Well, well, right. This is, I think this is a double entendre, because Egypt does represent, in this day and age, it represents bondage.
Yes, that's right.
All right, but in that time, it's foreseeing the turning of Judah to, that, you know, this is still the oracle against Ariel.
Okay.
Oh, against okay. Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, turned to the
yes.
Egypt for protection and alliance from the Chaldeans.
Right.
And as evident throughout the book of Jeremiah. And so this has a, this entire section
double.
Has a double meaning.
So it's literal and figurative. Yes, very good. Verse 3. Therefore shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame, and the trust in the shadow of Egypt your confusion, because we are to trust in Yahweh, not in earthly powers. Verse 4. For his princes were at Zoan, and his ambassadors came to Hanes. They were all ashamed of a people that could not profit them, nor be a help nor profit, but a shame and also a reproach. And that was our people that were the reproach. Verse 6. The burden of the beasts of the south into the land of trouble and anguish, from where come the young and old lion, the viper and fiery flying serpent. They will carry their riches upon the shoulders of young asses, and their treasures upon the bunches of camels, to a people that shall not profit them.
And those people are the beasts of the south,
right.
The lions and the serpents.
Right.
They're metaphors for people.
That's right.
And here they're metaphors for the people of Egypt, from whom Israel is seeking help.
Yes, yes. And again, when our people seek help with by making covenants with other peoples, those always fail. They always fail. Verse 7. For the Egyptians shall help in vain and to no purpose. Therefore have I cried concerning this. Their strength is to sit still. Okay, we're to wait patiently and call upon Yahweh. Verse 8. Now go, write it before them in a table and note it in a book, that it may be for the time to come forever and ever. That this is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of Yahweh. The Judeo-Christians won't hear the law of Yahweh. They absolutely refuse to hear it. Verse 10, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not to us right things. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy deceits.
Well, that's what John Hagee gives them.
That's right.
Look at how well he's doing.
Right. And it's amazing they can't see that it's deceit. Verse 11, get you out of the way. Turn aside out of the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. We're tired of hearing about the law. Verse 12, wherefore, thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and stay therein. Wow, is there any hope for these people? Verse 13, therefore, this iniquity shall be to you as a breach, ready to fall, swelling out in a near wall, whose breaking comes suddenly at an instant. I really like the juxtaposition of the hopeful verses, and then right away we come back to the condemnatory verses. It's like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, because that's kind of the history of our people, right?
Well, yes,
yeah.
And we have to keep being reminded of that condemnation if we stray from the path.
That's right. That's right. Verse 14, and he shall break it as the breaking of the potter's vessel that is broken in pieces. He shall not spare, so that there shall not be found in the bursting of it a shard to take the fire from the hearth or to take water without the pit. So he's going to break us, and he's going to break us, and he's going to break us until we learn. Verse 15. For thus says Yahweh Elohim, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest shall you be saved. In quietness and in confidence shall be your strength, and you would not. But you said, no, for we will flee upon horses. We're fleeing from Yahweh.
Therefore, well, Jonah tried that, and that didn't work.
Right?
I mean, it's people are silly.
Right, yeah. And when we're fleeing from Yahweh, we're fleeing from his law. We're fleeing from his discipline. We're fleeing from his chastisement. Therefore shall you flee, and we will ride upon the swift. Therefore shall they that pursue you be swift. But we can't outrun Yahweh, right? Verse 17. 1,000 shall flee at the rebuke of one, and at the rebuke of five shall you flee. Now, to me, this is actually talking about Al-Qaeda. Okay?
Well, it's talking about the general relationship of our people with the heathens,
right,
throughout the last several
right.
decades.
Right. And, you know, and then it goes in the Durable Insurance, there'll be wars and rumors of wars, and people terrified. They don't see that the wars are being staged, and, you know, they take all this stuff seriously, and they flee at the slightest word, okay? And it's flightiness in the people that lack ground because they refuse to consider the law. They refuse to consider the Bible. They refuse to consider the prophecies, which if they heeded these prophecies, they would understand what's happening. Till you be left as a beacon upon the top of a mountain and as an ensign on a hill, okay, rallying flag. Well,
this is basically saying that all of the faint-hearted and all of those who refuse to observe the commandments of God will be cast away, will be brushed away, and till ye be left as a beacon upon the top of a hill, the few of us
right.
who are obedient and accept God's word will be left behind as an ensign
right.
on a hill.
Yes, there shall be an ensign. Verse 18, and therefore will Yahweh wait, that he may be gracious to you, and therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you. For Yahweh is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him. Now, of course,
and this, you know, we can't do anything on our own.
Right.
We can't do it. And blessed are they who wait for him. This is the reward of the righteous.
Yes. Yes. And so therefore, obeying his laws, you know, and loving our brethren is extremely important. And that's paramount. It's much more important than, how should I put it, physical works, you know, that you can be proud of. I built this. I made that. I'm rich, et cetera, et cetera. This is what Yahweh wants from us, okay?
Now, punishment is the vehicle by which the plan of Yahweh is fulfilled,
uh-huh.
and that's also evident here.
Right. Well, and Paul talks about the chastening, about trying in the fire, okay? That's because we're a rebellious people, Yahweh has no other choice but to refine us in the fire.
And let me say, you know, These prophecies of Isaiah of the carrying away of the Israelites and the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of Tyre, the first promise that Israel would be taken captive is found in the words of Balaam in Numbers 24:22. So Yahweh planned this long in advance. He knew this was going to be necessary even as soon as time began, basically. But in Numbers 24:22, it says, nevertheless, and these are the words of Balaam, but remember, Balaam wanted to curse the children of Israel,
right.
and every time he opened his mouth, blessings came out.
Right.
So these have to be the words of Yahweh. Nevertheless, the Kenite shall be wasted, until Asher shall carry thee, meaning Israel,
yes.
away captive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yeah, so, and again, you know, there's this contrast between the general population of Israel, which is rebellious, and the remnant again. You know?
Well, right, absolutely. And yes. the remnant is the ensign on the hill.
Yes. Verse 19, for the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. We're not talking literal Jerusalem anymore. You shall weep no more. He will be very gracious to you at the voice of your cry, and he shall hear it. He will answer you. Those of us who are trying to have a relationship with Yahweh, he will hear us, unfortunately.
Now,
yeah, go ahead.
Now, this can't be literal Jerusalem because we were just told that the city where David dwelt would be totally smashed.
Right, right, yes. Verse 20, and though Yahweh give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not your teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers, and your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk you in it, when you turn to the right hand, when you turn to the left. You shall defile also the covering of your graven images of silver, and the ornament of your molten images of gold. You shall cast them away as a menstruous cloth. You shall say to it, get you from here. Okay.
Don't even keep the gold that the images were made of.
Right. Right. Verse 23. Then shall he give the rain of your seed, that you shall sow the ground with, and the bread of the increase of the earth, and it shall be fat and plenteous. In that day shall your cattle feed in large pastures. This reminds me of the statement by Alexis de Tocqueville when he assessed, you know, he assessed America, I guess America's first 100 years, and he said that America is great because America is good. If America fails, ceases to be good, it will cease to be great. And guess what, folks?
Here we are.
Here we are. Verse 24. The oxen likewise and the young asses that ear the ground, E-A-R, the ground, is that what the...
Well, yes, that's it.
What does that mean, ear the ground?
Me,
put your ears to the ground?
Let me skip down here. No, it might actually be, but let me see what this says.
Yeah, I guess the, putting your nose to the ground.
To till the ground.
Right,
to till it must be, and also the oxen and the donkeys which work the ground in the NAS.
Okay.
Till the ground in the Septuagint. It must be one of those 15th century uses of the word.
Right, it's an idiom. No doubt, like our idiom, put your nose to the grindstone, right? Okay, obviously no one has ever done that deliberately. Okay. And ere the ground shall eat clean provender, which has been winnowed with the shovel and with the fan. And there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill rivers and streams of waters in the day of the great slaughter, when the towers, when the towers fall. Oh, man, too bad this isn't the chapter 9, verse 11, right?
Well, you know something, when the towers fall, it's read the next verse, moreover, remember what I said about the moon and the sun?
Yes.
Last week, the moon being the Kenite power.
Right.
And the sun being the Adamic power of
right.
government.
Mm-hmm.
And I stand by that assessment
sure.
of those meanings. And here we have... Moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun.
Right, right, right. And the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days in the day that Yahweh binds up the breach of his people.
But, well, that tells me, you know, the light of the sun being sevenfold, that means that we'll be in a state of complete tyranny by our own government.
Right, right, yeah, seven times tyranny, right, yeah, totalitarianism. And heals the stroke of their wounds. So, yeah, we'll be under total tyranny when this judgment day happens. Verse 27, behold, the name of Yahweh comes from far, burning with his anger, and the burden thereof is heavy. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue as a devouring fire. Here's that devouring fire again, folks. This judgment day is going to be by fire. Get ready to feel the heat. Verse 28, and his breath, as an overflowing stream shall reach to the midst of the neck to sift the nations with the sieve of vanity, and there shall be a bridle in the jaws of the people causing them to err. Okay? You know, they're being led around by doctrines like liberalism, okay, Judeo-Christianity, okay, and they clamp their jaws on this these nonsensical doctrines and won't let go.
Well, let me say that all these false doctrines, they're not the reason for our punishment. They're the result of our punishment.
Right.
And this exactly describes our situation today.
Yes.
Compare Revelation 17:17. For Yahweh has bestowed it into their hearts to do his will and to have one purpose. Now, that's not necessarily for good.
Yeah.
But as a result of our disobedience.
Yes.
And to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of Yahweh shall be accomplished.
Yes, very good.
And that's that same bridle in the jaws of the people causing them to err.
Yes.
In other words, Yahweh, Satan went out and deceived all the nations.
Yes, yes. Verse 29, you shall have a song, as in the night when the holy solemnity is kept, and gladness of heart as when one goes with a pipe to come into the mountain of Yahweh to the mighty one of Israel. And the song is truth. We're singing the truth. Verse 30. And Yahweh shall cause his glorious voice to be heard, and shall show the lighting down of his arm with the indignation of his anger and with the flame of a devouring fire, with scattering and tempest and hailstones. So it's it's really kind of an odd image here. Here, again, the combination of salvation and fire. Salvation and fire. It's almost like the phoenix bird rising from the ashes of this flame, right? Verse 31. And in the book of Daniel, he says, in these end times, only the wise shall understand, and those who have not wisdom will just not be able to understand what's going on. Verse 31.
Well, I always thought that the phoenix bird was probably one of the oldest myths of our race.
Yes.
That relate to the demise and final resurrection of our culture.
Right. Yes, our entire race. Yes, yes. Very good. Verse 31. For through the voice of Yahweh shall the Assyrian be beaten down, which smote with a rod. And in every place where the grounded staff shall pass, which Yahweh shall lay upon him, it shall be with tabrets, and harps, and in battles of shaking will he fight with it. Is a tabret a bagpipe?
Well, I don't know. Let me go
okay.
Look. I don't think that I'm going to see the word bagpipe
language. It's called bagpipe by the Hebrews. I forget. That might be what they called it.
Well, in the Septuagint, it's with drums and with a harp.
With drums, okay.
And in the...
Oh, okay.
It's a tambourine in the NAS.
Oh, okay.
So I guess nobody knows what it is.
Okay.
There are many musical instruments that we don't really,
yeah.
We're not really sure what they are, you know.
According to some research I was doing recently, the Hebrew word for bagpipe is nebel, N-E-B-E-L, and it's often translated as the word psaltery, P-S-A-L-T-E-R-Y.
Okay.
So
yes,
people did, in fact, have the bagpipes way back when, okay?
Well, they must have slaughtered a sheep and wondered what to do with its stomach at one time.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Yeah. And
what
they
are we doing
still haven't learned
part?
How to play it. Okay. All right. Well, let me go back to verse 5. Wait a minute. Where was I?
Well, we're in verse 33.
Right.
And Tophet, again, means place of fire.
Yes. Okay. Tophet, yes. And the Tophet of Carthage... I have an article about the Tophet of Carthage on my website. I forget the author, but that is that place of fire, and that's where the Israelites and the Canaanites and all the heathen, the pagans, tossed their newly born babies into the fire. That's what this Tophet is, folks. And the modern equivalent is abortion. For Tophet is ordained of old, yea, for the king it is prepared. He has made it deep and large, the pile thereof is fire and much wood. The breath of Yahweh, like a stream of brimstone, does kindle it. Chapter 31, verse 1. Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help, and stay on horses and trust in chariots, because they are many, and in horsemen, because they are very strong. But they look not to the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. Now this would be your flag-waving patriots, who are always, talking about war. Okay? Of course, the wrong kind of war. We shouldn't be at war with Iraq. We shouldn't be at war with Afghanistan. These are Jew wars in which Israelites are dying for nothing. Verse 2.
Well, let me say that for 150 years maybe, the Jews of London used the blood and pride of Britain to protect and police their investments overseas.
That's right.
And for the last 100 years, since Teddy Roosevelt got us into the first imperialistic wars, right?
Right, right.
And it...
You could go back to,
the Spanish-American War.
Yes, you could go back
back to the Spanish-American War.
Yes.
And that's the first American wars, real American wars of imperialism.
Right.
Although it does date, the shores of Tripoli, that was in the presidency of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah,
you know that they were sending the Marines over to Africa to protect merchant ships.
Right, right, yeah. And that was a violation of the Monroe Doctrine.
Well, right. Well, why should the common American taxpayer care about the merchant? Let him protect his own ships and raise the price of his goods
exactly.
If it costs him more money.
Why should we be taxed to protect the commerce of the Jew?
Well, right, and that's exactly what that was all about.
Yeah.
That was during the rule of Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
That was... And he's the one president who was probably educated enough that he should have known better.
He should have known better, right.
Now, so there's, you know, the corruption of this country in favor of the merchant over the mass of people is
yes.
Right from the beginning. It's nothing new.
It's
well, basically,
story.
For the last 100 years, the
yeah.
American armed forces and the flower of our youth have been used, and especially since, you know, Vietnam, Korea, World War II, to protect the investments of the Jewish merchants overseas.
Right, right. And even if there weren't any Jews, the corporations would probably do the job, right? Because the corporations, whether they're owned by Jews, although most of them are, the vast majority of them are, but they're all full of corruption, too. You know, the original oil corporations were not owned by Jews. The Jews finagled their way in, you know, through banking interests, took over the oil companies. But the original oil companies were founded by, you know, guys who were actually digging the wells, and they became rich, you know. And so, you know, why
would until Rockefeller forced them all out of business and
bought
them up.
Right, exactly. So the corporations, even if there weren't any Jews, the corporations would have done the job. That, you know, they're just as evil. Verse 2, yet he also is wise and will bring evil and will not call back his words, but will arise against the house of the evildoers, and against the help of them that work iniquity. Or, you know, nothing will be able to help you against Yahweh. Verse 3, now the Egyptians are men and not God, and their horses flesh, not spirit. When Yahweh shall stretch out his hand, both he that helps shall fall, and he that is helped shall fall down, and they shall all fail together. For thus has Yahweh spoken to me, like as the lion and the young lion roaring on its prey, when a multitude of shepherds is called forth against him, he will not be afraid of their voice, nor abase himself for the noise of them. So shall Yahweh of hosts come down to fight for Mount Zion and for the hill thereof. And of course, he's talking about us and the government, the government of true Israel. That's what Zion is. It's that government in Revelation chapter 21, the 144,000 of all 12 tribes of Israel. Verse 5, as birds flying, so will Yahweh of hosts defend you and me, Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve us. Turn you to him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted.
Now let me... I like to talk about this as birds flying passage, right?
Okay.
Because this, the British Israel, they really go to great lengths to make this look like General Allenby.
Oh, right.
Conquest of Jerusalem, the physical city Jerusalem in 1970.
Yeah, General Allenby, yes.
And I can't buy that for 1 minute.
Okay. Well, I mean, it may be an oblique reference to it, but yeah, not very convincing. Yeah, I agree. Very good. Turn you to him from whom, actually, now that you mentioned it, there is an Arab prophecy that points to that date as well. And
Well, that's nice, but if there was an Arab prophecy,
yeah.
It came from Satan.
Right, the Allah Navi prophecy, okay? And it turns out that General Allenby, his name sounds very much like Allah Navi, right?
Well, that's nice and,
yeah,
and
right.
Quaint, but...
yes.
It's the work of the devil,
right?
If it's even true.
Yeah, and well, it does. So when Allenby went into Jerusalem, it was the city of Jerusalem was given back or taken back by true Israel of the house of Judah. No doubt about that. Okay, but they didn't keep it. They turned it over to the Jews. Okay, they gave it back to the devil. Verse 6: Turn you to him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted. For in that day every man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which your own hands have made to you for a sin. Then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man shall devour him, but he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. Well, it looks like if we're talking about the Middle East, you know, that looks like that started. Verse 9, and he shall pass over to his stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, says Yahweh, whose fire is in Zion and his furnace in Jerusalem. Okay? Now, definitely, There's no, the government of Yahweh does not exist in the current city of Jerusalem today. There's absolutely no doubt about it. So it can't be taken literally. If the Jews obey one law of Yahweh in the city of Jerusalem, I'd be amazed.
It's by mistake.
Yes, it's by an accident. It's an accident.
They might obey the, well, they take it to extremes, right?
Yeah.
The basic Sabbath, and they do that to keep up their pretense.
Right, exactly. And then their Sabbath, even if they do practice a lunar Sabbath, they made up their own rules that aren't based on Scripture, right?
Yes. Well, no, not
nothing
at all.
The
Jewish calendar is a perversion of Scripture.
Right. They do nothing, absolutely nothing. According to Scripture. Yet the vast majority of true Israelites, that is the Christian Israelites in the world today, believe that the Jews are actually following the Bible. They are not, folks. Chapter 2, 32, verse 1, "Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment. And a man shall be as a hiding place from the wind, and a covert or shelter from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land, and the eyes of them that see shall not be dim, and the ears of them that hear shall hearken. The heart also of the rash shall understand knowledge, and the tongue of the stammerers shall be ready to speak plainly." Obviously, we've been hearing a lot of gibberish coming from Judaism and Judeo-Christianity. Verse 5. "The vile person shall be no more called liberal." And
now, I can't believe that that's an accident.
Right.
I just can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the liberals are vile people.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So they won't be called liberal anymore. They'll be called what?
Right.
Vile.
Vile, right.
They'll be identified for what they are, in other words.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And nor the churl, said to be bountiful. What's a churl?
Churl is a scoundrel or a knave.
Okay.
So that describes about half of New York City.
Yeah, right. All of Detroit.
Los Angeles and Miami.
Two-thirds of L.A., right? Verse 6, "For the vile person will speak villainy." That's liberalism, folks. It's lies. "And his heart will work iniquity to practice hypocrisy." Liberalism, hypocrisy, villainy, liberalism, "and to utter terror against Yahweh, to make empty the soul of the hungry, and he will cause the drink of the thirsty to fail." They're bankrupting us. The liberals are bankrupting us, folks.
Well, right, and let me, to make a point, that word in Hebrew, nadib, means inclined, willing, noble, generous, and I would like to say that liberals are generous with other people's money,
right,
and they're inclined to do so for noble causes.
Right.
So they fit that definition perfectly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's delusion. It's the greatest delusion of all, that to consider yourself noble when you steal from Paul to pay Peter, right? That's
what
liberal
they're doing.
Nobility. Yeah. Verse 7. "The instruments also of the churl are evil. He devises wicked devices," the welfare state, transfer payments, "to destroy the poor." Aren't the poor being destroyed by the welfare state? They certainly are, folks. They're not being helped by the welfare state. "With lying words, false promises by the politicians, even when the needy speaks right." The poor are not helped. You know, it's amazing. The international bankers in New York City, they're trillionaires. But New York City is turning into a gigantic slum.
Well, it is, and the whole state is going broke.
Yeah.
I mean, the taxes here are just tyrannical. They're oppressive. There's no doubt. But without the taxes, without the taxes, private enterprise booms.
Right.
And we've seen this in history over and over and over again.
Right.
And look at the low-tax states.
Yeah.
Look at the low-tax states in America. Are all down south. Look at Texas.
Right.
And Texas has a booming economy compared to the Northeast, which has the highest taxes, and all of our industry is fled.
Yes, yeah. And here up north, the comparison between Illinois and Indiana is likewise, because Illinois has much higher taxes than Indiana. And Indiana's, you know, you go into Indiana's towns, they're neat, they're clean, they look new, they're well kept. But in Illinois, because of our higher taxes, the neighborhoods are shoddy. The streets are, you know, people complain. They drive from Indiana to Iowa, but in between there's these potholes. Okay, our highways are just full of potholes because our tax, even though we're taxed highly, the tax money is not being used to fix the roads.
Well, where you find the highest taxes, where you find the most Jews and the most minorities,
Yeah. You'll
find the highest taxes and the biggest bureaucracies.
Right. And corrupt.
And there's no doubt. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt that that will prove itself if you actually look at the statistics state by state.
Yes, yes. So these verses about liberals are pertinent to our current time, folks. Absolutely pertinent. All right, verse 8. But the liberal devises liberal things, and by liberal things shall he stand and fall. Verse 9, rise up, you women that are at ease. Hear my voice, you careless daughters. Give ear to my speech. Well, this sounds like it's talking about women who just aren't paying attention and allowing all this evil to pass before their eyes, not recognizing what it is. Okay? Very, very careless. Verse 10, many days and years shall you be troubled, you careless women, for the vintage shall fail, and the gathering shall not come. Sounds like they won't be having white babies, does it? Verse 11, tremble, you women that are at ease. Be troubled, you careless ones. Strip you and make you bare, and gird sackcloth upon your loins. They shall lament for the teats, for the pleasant fields, for the fruitful vine. In fact, motherhood today has become burdensome for women, especially if they're trying to balance a career with motherhood. Verse 13, upon the land of my people shall come up thorns and briars, yea, upon all the houses of joy in the joyous city, because the palaces shall be forsaken, the multitude of the city shall be left, the forts and towers shall be for dens forever, a joy of wild asses, a pasture of flocks, until the Spirit be poured out upon us from on high, and the wilderness be a fruitful field, and the fruitful field be counted for a force. So we're praying for this Spirit to be poured out upon us. And, of course, we had a taste of this at the first Advent. It was called Pentecost, verse 16.
Well, right, but, you know, there's something else else that's quaint about 14.
Okay.
You know, the palaces, the city, the multitude of the city, the forts, the towers, shall be dens forever, a joy of wild asses.
Yeah, right.
Where are all the Democrats?
Right, exactly.
Exactly. That's not that the Republicans are any better, but I couldn't miss making the illustration.
Right, right. Well, I don't know if elephants are mentioned in the Bible. I don't think they are. But absolutely, there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats today.
Well, we have cities full of wild asses. There's
right.
No doubt in my mind. One of them.
Absolutely. Verse 16. Then judgment shall dwell in the wilderness, and the righteousness remain in the fruitful field. And the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness quietness and assurance forever. Let's see. Let me turn. Do you have your Bible handy? I've got a note here for James 3:18. Cross reference here. If you could dial that up. This should be relevant here, and I'll just keep reading. And my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. Because, you know, in verse 17, we're told, and in numerous places, especially in the Pentateuch, where if we obey the law, we will not have diseases, we will not have social chaos. Basically, if we simply obey the law, everything will work out for us. But we are constantly rebelling against the law, and therefore all these lessons and all these tribulations come upon us. Okay, And the New Testament teaches the same thing, folks. Teaches exactly the same thing. Verses 19.
Well, James 3:18 says, "And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace."
Okay. Yes. And have and really have peace in mind and in and at heart. You know, not the false peace that you know the liberals and the Zionists are trying to give us.
Well, right. I mean, they. When I think about the peace of the U.S. government and of the international banker Jew and of the Zionist Jew, I see the peace that was described by Tacitus of the Roman Empire,
uh-huh.
where he said that they created desolation and called
right.
it peace.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And verse 18, "And my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. When it shall hail coming down on the forest, and the city shall be low in a low place. Blessed are you that sow beside all waters, that send forth there the feet of the ox and the ass." Okay, we have about, let's continue with the text.
Now, elephant is an ox, actually, a
okay.
water ox.
All right, okay.
That's the word aleph is the Hebrew word for ox. That's
oh, really?
Where it came. Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, right. Yeah.
That's where the letter
that's
came from.
The first letter, aleph, right.
Yes.
Okay. Chapter 33, verse 1, "Woe to you that spoil, and you were not spoiled, and deal treacherously, and they dealt not treacherously with you." Sounds like we're talking about Jews here. "When you shall cease to spoil, you shall be spoiled." Sounds like Obadiah. "And when you shall make an end to deal treacherously, they shall deal treacherously with you." Okay? Yeah, this is definitely talking about Jews here. "Oh, Yahweh, be gracious to us. We have waited for you. Be you their arm every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. At the noise of the tumult, the people fled, and the lifting up of yourself, the nations were scattered. And your spoil shall be gathered like the gathering of the caterpillar, as the running to and fro of locusts shall he run upon them." There's going to be tremendous confusion, mass confusion, people running to and fro, not knowing what to do. Verse 5.
But, well, the caterpillar and the locust, are, I believe, and this is in another prophecy, I think it's in Joel.
Okay.
It might be Mike, but I think it's Joel, where we'll get back, at the day of judgment, we will get back everything the caterpillar ate and everything that the locust devoured.
Right.
And that's used of the other races,
uh-huh.
the parasitical races that have, the liberals, the Jews and the liberals have used
right.
to take the wealth from the white middle class in this nation,
yes,
and in all the Western nations,
yeah.
to give over to these heathens, and really they scrape most of it off the top, and what's left trickles down to these other races, and it's wasted.
Yes, absolutely.
And they never learn anything by it,
and we
end up with a whole class of bureaucratic parasites sucking off our lifeblood.
Right, and then the recipients of the transfer payments hate us even more because it's not enough. Right?
And yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look at the tumult in Louisiana.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, wherever you have a black ghetto, they have their hands out. They've been receiving welfare payments from the white taxpayer for 40 years, since the 1960s. Has it improved the single black neighborhood?
They've destroyed their own habitats, and they
right.
hate us.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly the outcome.
Yeah. Verse 5. "Yahweh is exalted, for he dwells on high. He has filled Zion with judgment and righteousness. And wisdom and knowledge shall be the stability of your times, and strength of salvation. The fear of Yahweh is his treasure." Now, of course, wisdom and knowledge. There aren't any churches that preach wisdom and knowledge. they preach the gospel of prosperity, not wisdom and knowledge. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." There's no knowledge in any of these churches, folks. Nothing. No knowledge whatsoever. Verse 7, "Behold, their valiant ones shall cry without. The ambassadors of peace shall weep bitterly. The highways lie waste. The wayfaring man ceases. He has broken the covenant. He has despised the cities. He regards no man." In fact, as I was reading verse 8, I remember because I was a teenager in the 1960s. And when I'd be driving between Illinois and Colorado and between Illinois and Toronto, I was often going in those two directions, there'd be hitchhikers all the time, okay? But then when the welfare state kicked in, it became too dangerous to be a hitchhiker. Verse 9.
Well, let me read real quick. I have Joel 2:25 here.
Okay.
In relation to what I just said.
Okay.
And I will restore to you in the years that the locust has eaten.
Uh-huh.
I will restore to you the years that the locust has eaten,
okay,
the cankerworm and the caterpillar, my great army which I sent among you. And that's that relates directly to the sowing of the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of beast.
Right.
It relates directly to this. And if you look at the consequences of disobedience in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, one of the consequences of disobedience is to be overrun with the aliens.
Yes.
And when we turn to the righteousness of God, he will diminish the alien among us.
Right. Right. Yeah, and the Judeo-Christian churches simply don't understand this, and they're actually encouraging bringing more in.
Yes, they do.
Making it worse. Increasing our judgment. Absolutely. Very good. Verse 9. The earth mourns and languishes. Lebanon is ashamed and hewn down. Sharon is like a wilderness, and Bashan and Carmel shake off their fruits. So it's becoming a wilderness. And, you know, the latest reports about the bees, every year one-third of the bee population is dying. We're going to see food prices rising, folks.
I've been keeping my eye on one big fat bee that's been hanging around my backyard. And I swear, I did not see a bee last year.
Really?
Uh-huh. I didn't see. I discussed it with my mother. You know, she's been living here for 7 years. And she, you know, this is like last August or September. And we had a terrible summertime last year. We had a lot of rain.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the 60s, it hardly ever hit 80. It was rainy and overcast every day. And I said, Mom, you know, I've never seen a bee all summer.
Yeah.
And she's like, wow, you know, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I see one big, fat bumblebee. It's not a honeybee. It's a bumblebee, but they still pollinate, right?
Right.
And I'm looking for a second one or a third one.
Yeah,
you know, but
right.
I've noticed him in the backyard three days running now. I mean, you can't miss him. At the first time I saw him, I thought he was a hummingbird.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I looked out
that's
the kitchen
big
window. He was in the alley, and my mother had just put the hummingbird feeder out because that season's here, and she's waiting to see her beloved little hummingbirds. And this bee, I thought he was a hummingbird.
Wow.
He's huge. I mean, he ate all the other bees.
Oh, okay. Right. Are you sure it isn't a Borg drone?
Well, no, this is definitely a bee. He's been pollen. I've seen him flying around the flowers. And it's like a treasure because I don't remember seeing one last year.
Right. Wow, weird. Oh, maybe it's a mutant. A mutant bee.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember seeing bees all the time. They were everywhere.
Right, yeah.
And
even
here last year, all I saw last year here was wasps.
Yeah, yeah. No, growing up in the 50s and 60s, in the city of Chicago, bees were everywhere. Wasps were everywhere. Yeah, mosquitoes, you know. That whole population is dwindling of insects. The pollinating insects is dwindling. Absolutely, yes. All right, a few more verses here. Now will I rise, says Yahweh. Now will I be exalted. Now will I lift up myself. You shall conceive chaff, you shall bring forth stubble, your breath as fire shall devour you, and the people shall be as the burnings of lime, as thorns cut up shall they be burned in fire. Hear you that are far off what I have done, and you that are near, acknowledge my might. Okay, and this is what we have to do. Number one, we have to acknowledge Yahweh is our creator, our father, our teacher. He is everything. We're nothing without him. When we abandon him, that's what, and it amazes me, Bill, how few Christians seem to understand the relationship between abandoning Yahweh and the punishment they receive. And there's plenty of verses that say when these punishments come upon our people, then they blame him, right? Then they blame him. You're an evil God. Why are you punishing us? Well, when are you going to obey my law? If you start obeying my law, maybe I'll stop punishing you.
Well, absolutely. And that's what it boils down to. We can't fight our way out of this mess.
Yes.
And we sure as hell can't vote our way out of it. We have to repent our way out of it.
Right.
And that's the scripture, and that's the only way we're going
right.
to get out of this mess is for our people to return
yes.
to God.
Yes. And
the true meaning of scripture
and
true righteousness.
Right. And I remember in the 60s enjoying fire and brimstone sermons, okay, full of the message of repentance. There aren't any pastors in the mainstream churches who teach repentance anymore. It has all been replaced by the gospel of prosperity and the gospel of personal salvation. That's all they teach anymore. There's nothing else. I mean, few and far between are the fire and brimstone preachers who preach repentance. It's almost non-existent.
I honestly can't remember. I went to Catholic Church until about sixth or seventh grade, and I can't remember anything they spoke about. I don't know what they spoke about.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Most
in your case, yeah, right. They all teach race mixing too, gospel race mixing.
A lot of it was Latin anyway.
Yeah, right. In the case of Catholics, they bored us to death. Right. Okay, folks. So we're gonna end here in the middle of chapter 33, verse 13. And we'll pick up Isaiah next week. Okay, now, I may have a problem because I'll be traveling next week. I anticipate being back home by Friday evening to do the show. If not, Bill, maybe you can cover me, and I can maybe call in from my cell phone and do the show on the road, okay? So that's a possibility, okay? So be prepared for I may not be with you next Friday, okay?
Now, well, right, and I might want to recap some of these last two chapters.
Oh.
I'm going to be honest with you. I ran out of notes two chapters ago. I didn't prepare
okay.
for five chapters today.
Yeah, we're flying through Isaiah much faster than I anticipated, yeah, and we did maybe 35 shows on the book of Galatians alone, right? So,
no, I don't think it was 35.
No,
I think
well,
we missed a lot of weeks in between.
Right,
we're
exactly.
off 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Right. I have on Chris Degeninger now, I broke out a lot of the topics
uh-huh.
that we discussed
okay.
and put them on a separate menu so that they could be found more easily.
Yeah, okay. So
I have an Internet Radio Archives by Topic section now.
Very good.
And it says 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Acts, Colossians, Daniel,
yeah.
Galatians,
right.
John, Hebrews, Isaiah, Paul's pastoral epistles, which we've only done one program on so far.
Uh-huh.
The night we covered Titus and Philemon.
Right.
Romans, 2 seed line, and then miscellaneous topics, which is just about everything that
yeah.
we've done except for one of those. And
right.
and it's a lot easier now to just go to Galatians and click on that and find
right.
all the Galatians.
You did say 2 seed line, right? Because I know people have been asking for like MP3. CDs of these subjects, but that's
well. I have all that. I have all them on an MP3 CD.
Okay.
I mean, I have a notice on my site that they're
okay.
available. I mean, you could download them all, but now they could all be downloaded from one place. They
okay.
they could go right to the menu that says Internet Radio Archives by Topic. Click on 2 CD line. There were 35 programs we did together. There were a couple of other 2 CD line programs I did on nights that you were off or whatever that are on the miscellaneous topics
okay.
menu, but those 35 programs we did together are all in one place now.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, so feel free to download this material and make sure to donate some money to Bill for doing all this, right?
Well, I mean, I don't like to spam, but it always comes in handy, and I send people CDs all the time, people
yeah.
with contact.
Yes, yeah. right. And so now tomorrow we're going to discuss the origin of the Scots and Gaels in Israel and Scythia and Cumeria. Okay, that's going to be tomorrow night's subject. We're going to document the migrations of the Israelites into Spain, northern Spain, and Ireland, Britain, and related areas. Okay, so don't let anybody tell you that the Brits and English and Irish are not Israelites. They most definitely are. And we're going to find that they are part of the Dan, Gad, Zerah, Judah, and various other tribes, okay? And so we're going to document the migrations through Troy, through Greece, et cetera, et cetera. So this is going to be mainly historical, but we're going to talk a lot of scripture too, okay? And then Sunday, Greg, Greg and I, Greg Howard, we'll be doing part three of Angels, Demons, and Prophecy. And we're going to be getting very deeply into the subject of demons and in the books of Enoch, Jasher, and also Second Esdras. We'll be covering that as well as many scriptures from the Bible, because those are all our literature. Those books are our literature. They're not Jewish literature, folks. They're Israelite literature. So that should be a good show, too. So looking forward to seeing you again tomorrow night, Bill. And then to everybody listening, thank you for joining us. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.